Wallace Kleindienst, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona, and this is American History. Reading from The 10 Key Campaigns of the American Revolution. Continuing with campaign number 6, The Empire Strikes Back, the Philadelphia Campaign, 1777. It's the summer of 1777, and George Washington's army is in New Jersey. General William Howe and the British Army are in New York, and instead of attacking by land, the British decided to attack the Americans by sea, boarding boats to float down to the Chesapeake Bay and come up the Delaware River and attack Philadelphia and the Continental Congress. The final days of July arrived with the British fleet tacking into the Delaware Bay to assess the current conditions and intelligence about Washington's army. When news reached George Washington about 24 hours later, he ordered the American army to cross into Pennsylvania to block a move against Philadelphia. Almost simultaneously, the Howe brothers made what was perhaps the most critical decision of 1777 aboard bobbing ships in Delaware Bay. The Howe brothers, British general and admiral, acted upon incorrect information that Washington's entire army was across the Delaware River and approaching Wilmington, Delaware, and that the Delaware River was heavily fortified below Philadelphia. Although General William Howe was informed that Washington's army was west of the Delaware River, little, if any, of the Continental Army had yet to arrive in Pennsylvania, and there were few American defenses on the river. Thus, there was a clear and open path for the British Army to march on the American capital. Despite easy access to Philadelphia, approximately 90 miles by ship, General Howe decided to sail south to Chesapeake Bay, where he could put his troops ashore without molestation. On July 31, 1777, the fleet headed back to sea. General Howe later claimed the move farther south benefited British General John Burgoyne, who was in upstate New York, by drawing Washington away from the Hudson River Valley. In reality, the moment General William Howe gave the order to steer towards the Chesapeake, he eliminated any possibility of aiding General Burgoyne. When news of General Howe's location in the upper Chesapeake Bay arrived on August 21st, George Washington scrambled to move the scattered elements of his army into a position to confront the British south of Philadelphia. On August 24th, Washington paraded his troops through Philadelphia en route to Delaware. It was time to block General Howe's approaches to the capital. The next morning, Washington crossed into Delaware. About the same time, British General Howe began offloading his troops into northeastern Maryland. Now that Howe had landed, making a connection with the Delaware River was imperative. Throughout the war, the British were in short supply of land transportation. General Howe's logistical concerns were compounded because many of his horses had died during the sea voyage. This operational conundrum affected Howe's decision-making throughout the campaign. Had Howe landed in northern Delaware at the end of July, he would have had his connection with the Delaware River. Now, Howe had been barely back on land, and he had no choice but to find and operate along the waterway. Howe had been avoiding a pitched confrontation, but the campaign season was rapidly winding down, and there was precious little to show for it. George Washington had an outpost in northern Delaware at Cooch's Bridge on the Christiana River, which General Howe would have to deal with in order to reach Washington's main army. Howe did just that on September 3rd. The fitful fighting lasted some 7 hours before the American detachment ran out of ammunition and fled across the bridge and eventually back towards Wilmington, Delaware, leaving the British in command of the banks of the Christiana River. The battle, which carried Howe one step closer to Philadelphia and the Continental Congress, was the largest land engagement in the history of Delaware. On September 8th, General Howe gained the Pennsylvania border ahead of General Washington. By late morning, the bulk of Howe's army was camped on the hills around Hockessin, Delaware, well above Washington's right flank. Outgeneraled yet again, George Washington scrambled to get his army in motion and into a blocking position to protect Philadelphia. In the middle of the night, Washington pulled the Continental Army from northern Delaware, marched north, and the next day began moving into positions on the east side of the Brandywine River near Chadd's Ford in Pennsylvania. Howe's army moved north, parallel to Washington's position, and camped about 6 miles west of the American army at Kennett Square. Washington had spent the long summer months attempting to hinder British movements with militia and other troops while seeking a favorable opportunity to make a stand should one become necessary. The terrain along the Brandywine River provided him with exactly that. The Battle of Brandywine was the longest and largest single-day engagement of the war. The fighting on September 11, 1777, is also a study of contradictions. Washington hoped a stout defense along the rolling terrain hugging the Brandywine River would bar British access to Philadelphia. His goal was to defend its various crossings and prevent General Howe from gaining access to the East Bank. Although Washington had his troops in position east of the Brandywine a full day before the fighting began, he remained almost completely ignorant of the surrounding terrain and road network, failing to identify and guard all the fords available to the British. There was a lack of reconnaissance patrols. Even more alarming was that no one in a position of authority thought to speak to the many local residents serving in the Continental Army. While General Washington prepared for battle with little terrain knowledge and even less help from the locals, General William Howe made his plans with the advantage of both. Pennsylvania Loyalist Joseph Galloway and others provided the British general with everything he needed to know about local terrain conditions and the road network. General Howe recognized that a frontal assault against the American positions would be too costly. Instead, he sent Wilhelm von Niephuisen's division ahead to pin Washington in place and executed a wide left hook under the command of General Cornwallis that surprised the Americans beyond their vulnerable right flank. Washington discovered the move too late to prevent it, but he managed to shift the bulk of his army to oppose it and conducted a dogged defensive action that cost General Howe dearly. Howe's success that day can be evenly credited to his good generalship and George Washington's failures. Washington's poor use of scouts and the intelligence they produced haunted him throughout that long day. Howe's flanking maneuver worked almost to perfection. Late on the evening of September 11th, Washington and his army were retreating in haste from the battlefield at Brandywine towards Chester, Pennsylvania. General Howe did little to interfere with Washington's efforts to regroup in the immediate aftermath of the battle. For 4 days, Howe kept most of his army on the battlefield instead of launching a vigorous pursuit of the American militia. In truth, the British army was exhausted. The soldiers had endured a long, tedious voyage, followed by hard marching and prolonged combat with sustained casualties. They were in no condition to drive ahead. Washington needed to find fresh defensive ground to protect Philadelphia from General Howe's victorious British army. The Continentals left Chester, crossed the Schuylkill River at the Middle Ferry, and marched out towards Germantown, thus completing a 19-mile march. Moving the army north of the Schuylkill River put Washington behind the last natural barrier between the British and Philadelphia. As a defensive barrier, the Schuylkill River was less than ideal. If defending the numerous fords across the Brandywine had been difficult for Washington, then defending the fords across the Schuylkill, which were more spread out, would prove a Herculean task. Moving into the Germantown area left Washington with a vexing conundrum. He felt duty-bound to defend the capital, but he could not leave the critical supply depots at Reading, Pennsylvania, and other places in the backcountry unprotected. Moving northwest to protect the depots would expose the capital. Moving into position to protect Philadelphia exposed the supply centers upon which his army depended. It was now readily obvious that the loss at Brandywine made protecting the American capital nearly impossible. Protecting his storehouses had to take precedence over the most important city in North America. Most of General Howe's British army, meanwhile, remained idle. General Howe could have crossed the upper fords of the Schuylkill River with ease, cutting Washington off from his crucial supply depots. But Howe had a history of enthusiastic follow-through after successive battles. Brandywine's aftermath was no different. On September 14, 1777, Washington's army left the Germantown area and recrossed the Schuylkill River. The Americans were now strategically positioned to block a British advance to the Schuylkill. Although they had taken a roundabout route to get there, they were just 10 miles from where they had fought at Brandywine. On the night of September 15th, General Howe issued orders for the British Army to move into the Great Valley the following day. Rain had already moved into the area, turned the rutted dirt roads into a dense paste through which thousands of soldiers tramped. What Howe seems not to have known is that on the morning of September 16th, General Washington's army was moving from Lancaster Road and ascending the South Valley Hill to block Hill from the Schuylkill River. The armies were once more on a collision course, and only 5 days after the conclusion of the largest single-day battle of the American Revolution at Brandywine. The rain showers, which had been heavy but intermittent, were now blending into a near-continuous downpour. As the British columns came together at Goshen Meeting, Washington sought to move his army south from the Lancaster Road and deploy along the crest of South Valley Hill to block Howe's advance. General Howe and General Cornwallis hoped to catch Washington moving west on Lancaster Road, along which the Continentals camped the night before, not south of the road. However, the two armies were marching towards each other. The British soon pushed Washington out of the way. Since the majority of the Continental Army never started marching up the South Valley Hill, Washington quickly formed a line on the southern slope of the North Valley Hill, approximately 3 miles north of where the two separate actions known as the Battle of the Clouds occurred. Other than some skirmishing and muddy maneuvering, however, there was no major clash of arms. To the dismay of General Howe and his subordinates, the driving rain of a northeaster prevented the British from exploiting their initial success. When the storm clouds cleared the next day, the path was clear to the Schuylkill River fords and an easy occupation of Philadelphia by the British. Faulty cartridge boxes led to the destruction of most of the Continental Army's ammunition supply. Washington decided to move to Warwick Furnace in northwestern Chester County to obtain a fresh supply of ammunition. From the new position, the Army was in reach of its depots at Reading, Pennsylvania. The position also left Washington well-placed to observe British movements and to move into blocking positions on the Schuylkill River, with the nearest ford 9 miles from the Army. When the Army moved west, Washington left Anthony Wayne's Pennsylvania Division behind to screen the rear of the Army and keep watch on British General Howe. After waiting out the rain on September 18th, the British shifted into Tredfin Township, not far from an iron production facility known as Valley Forge. Howe needed to wait for his opportunity to cross the Schuylkill River. Like every creek nearby, the river was above flood stage. Meanwhile, Howe set his sights on Continental supply depots south of the Schuylkill, including Valley Forge. Light Horse Harry Lee and Washington's aide, Alexander Hamilton, were sent there with small detachments of dragoons on September 18th, to move the supplies to the north side of the Schuylkill. That evening, Howe sent a column to seize the storehouse at Valley Forge. Light Horse Harry Lee and Alexander Hamilton escaped without injury, but the British seized the magazine and the supplies. General Washington wanted to get into a blocking position north of the Schuylkill River near the fords around Valley Forge. With General Wayne behind the British, Washington hoped to catch the British in a pincer movement. Most of the army camped along the east side of Perkaman Creek after their grueling 29-mile march. Washington's movement left Wayne in a terrible position. Wayne was now unsupported by the Continental Army, with the main British army between him and Washington. The next day, Washington's army moved from Perkaman Creek and marched 10 to 15 miles to take up positions along the Schuylkill on a 9-mile front. Just as he had done at Brandywine, George Washington spread his army thin along a wide front, hoping to prevent the British crossing of a natural barrier. Despite defeat at Brandywine and near disaster at the Battle of the Clouds, Washington had seized the initiative again. General Howe decided on the evening of September 20th that the problem behind him, Anthony Wayne's Pennsylvania Division, had to be eliminated so he could focus on Washington's troops north of the Schuylkill River and achieve his objective of capturing Philadelphia. General Howe tapped Major General Charles Gray to command the operation. Hoping to achieve complete surprise, General Gray ordered his men to remove the flints from their muskets and perform their dirty work with bayonets. While General Wayne was forewarned, the situation quickly got away from him. The British 2nd Light Infantry Battalion swarmed through Wayne's camp and surrounded the American rear. Confusion spread through the ranks of Wayne's command. Men scattered to save themselves, climbing over fences and into the woods. Many were caught by the pursuing British while still on the fences and bayoneted. The affair would go down in history as the Paoli Massacre. Once General Gray's column returned from the successful Paoli operation, General Howe put his army in motion and moved ahead with his plans to cross the Schuylkill River. The British Army departed its camps and marched into the Valley Forge area. General Howe had six river crossings in front of him, with the American Continental Army stretched for 9 miles along the Schuylkill River fords. It was painfully obvious to Washington that American General Anthony Wayne's loss at Paoli had altered their strategic situation. Washington had intended to prevent Howe's crossing of the Schuylkill by raiding his rear and seizing his baggage. Washington now faced a Hobson's choice, for the storehouses at Reading needed to be protected, but protecting them would uncover Philadelphia, which, politically speaking, could not be surrendered without a fight. To the poorly supplied army, protecting those backcountry regions was more important than the psychological loss of Philadelphia. It was obvious, however, that General Howe could move rapidly west, capture the Continental Supply Centers, return for Philadelphia, and win both major prizes. No matter what Howe decided to do, Philadelphia was all but lost. On the evening of September 21st, Washington pulled away from the river fords and shifted his army west to better protect the supply center. The risky movement exposed the lower fords of the Schuylkill River to the British. The British drove across that night. Having duped Washington into moving west away from the fords, the British Army crossed to the north side unopposed. The British were now firmly positioned between Washington and Philadelphia. No more combat was needed to seize the capital. Howe held all their strategic cards except one. He desperately needed to be resupplied by the British fleet. If Washington could bar access to Philadelphia by the Royal Navy via the Delaware River, Washington might be able to starve Howe's army into submission. On September 25th, Howe marched his army in two columns, 11 miles into Germantown, just 5 miles from Philadelphia. Although he had been beaten at Brandywine and maneuvered away from Philadelphia, George Washington was eager to strike the British. The army's current position, however, precluded any attempt to do so. The American Continentals were not within striking distance of the British position at Germantown. British General George Cornwallis received the honor of leading a column of troops into Philadelphia on September 26. After the triumphant show of force parade, General Cornwallis deployed his men to cover the city's approaches. General William Howe now needed to keep the Continental Army at bay while his command, with the assistance of the British fleet, endeavored to open the Delaware River to provisions and supplies for his army. The situation was rather simple. If the British could gain control of the Delaware River, Philadelphia would remain in the hands of the British crown. If they could not navigate the Delaware River at will, they would not have sufficient supplies to remain in place and would almost certainly have to evacuate the capital. On September 26, Washington and his army crossed Picamon Creek and arrived at Pennypacker's Mills, 10 miles closer to Philadelphia, but still more than 20 miles outside the city. The host of problems and decisions Washington had to make included the management of the vitally important American defenses along the Delaware River. This line consisted primarily of three forts: Fort Mercer on the east bank of the river at Red Bank in New Jersey, Fort Mifflin directly across from Mercer on a mud island on the Pennsylvania shore, and Fort Billingsport, 2 miles downstream on the same side of the river as Mercer. With American quartermasters stripping resources from the region surrounding Philadelphia and army patrols blanketing the area, it would not only get progressively harder to obtain provisions from the countryside sufficient to supply the British army. Winter was coming. The men would need cold weather clothing, and the Delaware River would begin to freeze in early December. General Howe decided to move first against the southernmost enemy position on the river at Fort Billingsport, New Jersey. October opened with the British seizure of Fort Billingsport, which meant the loss of the first line of the Chevaux de Frise River obstructions. The British Navy began moving the obstructions immediately, but the tedious process would require 3 weeks to complete. Washington had the Continental Army moving again on October 2nd. The march took the men 4 miles beyond the crossroads in Worcester Township onto Mexican Hill. Washington was now fewer than 20 miles from the city limits and about half that from Germantown. If Washington could break through the British camp at Germantown, General Howe would be hard-pressed to stop the American Continentals short of Philadelphia. Washington and his staff calculated the remaining British forces in Germantown to number perhaps 8,000 men. He planned his assault on Germantown and gained the full consent of his generals for the undertaking. Surprise was a key element of the plan, which would require a great deal of discipline, coordination, and good luck. Once approved, Washington intended to divide his army into four columns, intended to meet on the northern and western edges of Germantown simultaneously at 5 in the morning on October 4th. The columns would move silently through the darkness for 14 to as many as 20 miles over a series of poorly marked roads. These movements would show whether the army was capable of a nighttime march and a coordinated surprise attack. The Americans had tried to execute a similar plan at Trenton, New Jersey, nearly 9 months earlier, but two of the four columns there had failed to reach their objectives. Washington had learned through hard experience that stand-up fights against the British were a losing proposition. Thus, Washington's preferred tactic was to strike isolated enemy detachments, which is precisely what he was attempting to do against the depleted British garrison holding Germantown. In truth, as Washington well knew, the plan was bold, complicated, and risky for an army like his to attempt. Washington hoped to drive into a major village along four different roads using precise timing that his men would have to pull off in the dark. Coordinating the movements of each column so that they would arrive in Germantown simultaneously was more than ambitious. On paper, Washington counted nearly 14,000 men, but the army that marched and fought on October 4th, 6 miles outside Philadelphia, was much smaller. It had been bleeding stragglers and deserters throughout the campaign, and some men had to be left behind to protect the encampment and wagons. It was the first time during the war that Washington launched his own army in a major attack against the main British force. To achieve maximum effect and complete surprise, it was imperative that each of the four American columns reached its assigned location at the same time, a rather tall order given that each column had to march a different distance in the dark. Coordinating the timing of departure was crucial. Any errors could throw the entire attack plan off and result in piecemeal assault, allowing the British to concentrate troops at each attack developed. A final key to the battle plan was destroying Howe's Germantown garrison before any reinforcements could arrive from Philadelphia, just 6 miles away. Once the engagement began, the British light infantry experienced a temporary breakdown of discipline and were overwhelmed by superior numbers, and at least early in the fighting, better tactical management. Their conduct disgusted General Howe, but the superior overall discipline within the British ranks proved decisive in the end. Thomas Musgrave's decision to save his regiment by moving into Cliveden, a stone house in Germantown, rather than surrendering, proved fatal to Washington's attack. Perhaps the most surprising achievement that day was that all four columns arrived where they were expected. Once the American columns arrived and the British line was collapsing, the pivot point of the battle rested on the decision made at Cliveden to surround and assault Musgrave's men holed up inside the house. Rather than make his own intuitive decision, Washington held an impromptu council of war on the field. Henry Knox insisted that the British troops inside the house had to be neutralized before continuing to drive south into Germantown. It was a tactically flawed decision that tied up many hundreds of men and commands that would otherwise have continued the attack and kept the British Army off balance. Washington's decision turned the initiative over to the British. The men under General Anthony Wayne and John Sullivan, well to the front, heard firing in their will, believed that they had been outflanked, and reversed course. During the chaotic withdrawal, Americans fired into one another. The time wasted around Cliveden and the withdrawal of the two divisions in the middle of the American assault gave the British the time they needed to regroup. Reading about Campaign No. 6, The Empire Strikes Back, the Philadelphia Campaign, 1777, and the 10 Key Campaigns of the American Revolution will be continued. This has been American History. This is Wallace Klingdienst, volunteer leader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. If you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org. Left click on Broadcast Info and Audio. Then under Programming Links, left click on On Demand Podcasts. You can now listen to Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or other smart home device.